members of the public, visitors. I'm sorry about the disarray when you arrived, but it's a bit difficult to get brownies or rainbows out of here at 6:30 and us arranged around in the proper order by 7:00. So you bear with us. Anyway, welcome to Councillor Eileen Ragg, East Devon District Councillor and Devon County Councillor, and Rob Sainsbury and Rebecca Harriet of representing the NHS Northern, Eastern and Western Devon Clinical Commissioning Group. These people are going to address us in first part of our meeting tonight. Apologies for absence, please.
Had apologies from Councillor Claire Goff, Councillor Brian Toy and Councillor Pat Graham.
Steve?
I'm sorry, you've done it, Chair. I do apologise.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Keep up.
Pauline Garber.
Okay. Do we have any people in the public gallery wish to speak tonight? No. I propose to take the agenda items 1 to 7 in that order, and then with your agreement, we'll go to item 9 to receive an update from Councillor Eileen Ragg on the progress and funding of the Ex-Tidal Defence System. And then, with your agreement, also go to item 10, where we've got the CCG Future Care Consultation. We've got a short presentation from them, after which there will be chances for question and answers. I'd like to limit that item to 30 minutes, because we've got quite a bit of business on the agenda tonight. So with your agreement, go to item 2, council meeting minutes, to confirm and sign as a correct record the minutes of the meeting of the town council held on 10th of October 2016. Has everybody read these minutes? Agreed, Steve? Right, thank you. Second, please. There's Bill. All in favour? Thank you very much. Any items arising from those minutes that we need to look at? Page 100. One hundred and one, one hundred and two, one hundred and three, one hundred and four. Thank you very much. Declarations of pecuniary interest and dispensations. Members to declare any interest they may have on the agenda and agree any dispensations to stay. Pauline?
I have a personal interest in this, Mrs. Jeeves, as my daughter-in-law works for them.
Thank you. Darrell?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a personal interest in item 10 as well, in the fact that I've recently started working for the CCG.
Oh, thank you.
So, upon advice, as I did at East Devon, I will withdraw from the chamber during the discussion.
Lovely. That's why I thought we'd limit it to 30 minutes.
It's all
right. Thank you very much. Urgent business. I've not got any indication of any urgent business. To resolve that the press and public be excluded from the meeting during the consideration of items in part 2 of the agenda,
16,
that's item 15.
16. Item 16.
Oh, item 16, sorry. Misprint.
Yeah.
HR group meeting notes. So we come to item 10,
We're going to do 9 first?
No.
No?
Oh, sorry, 9. Sorry, yeah. That's it. 9. I'm dyslexic with figures. So, Councillor Eileen Wright, could we have an update, please, on your...
Yeah, would you like me to do it from this side?
Wherever you feel happy.
Yeah, if you can hear me, okay, I'm sure you can.
Yeah.
Just to say, just to recap then, in July there was a meeting of the South West Regional Flood and Coastal Committee, which I attended as a member of Devon County Council. That meeting was in Biddeford, where we had site visits in the morning. During that time, I was approached by two members of the Environment Agency who said that the Exmouth Tidal Flood Defence Scheme was probably going to be put on hold. Well, in the afternoon, that did come up at the meeting on the agenda. And following concern, I expressed serious concern because the cost of the scheme had risen in a very short time from £4.3 million to £16.5 million. That suggested to me that there was a significant and serious risk of flooding to Exmouth, and that has been agreed by somebody at the Environment Agency. Well, following that, there was a meeting of the committee in Exmouth. They thought it would, or the regional risk manager thought it would maybe focus minds. And we had that meeting on the 20th of October. The committee visited Exmouth. We had a meeting in the town hall. The subject wasn't on the agenda that day, but we did meet. Town Clerk Lisa Bowman was there. I think you were invited, Chairman, but I think you were away at the time, so you couldn't attend. And also, the leader of East Devon District Council was invited, but he too had other things on that day. So we looked at the various sites on the estuary side, again at Camperdown. And then down by the clock tower, because those are the areas where the residential properties are, and the grant funding for that can only be used for, I mean, the priority of the committee is risk to life and residential property. So those areas were the ones which were considered. And we're talking about the colony, obviously, and we remember, some of us, the flooding, the dreadful flooding in 1960. You see something like that, you don't ever forget it. And then the subsequent works to widen Withycombe Brook by what was then the National Rivers Authority, which has prevented flooding in the town. We have had problems down in the colony area. Sure, Councillor Dumper, Councillor Gazzard will be aware of that in Hartop Road, where at times of heavy rainfall and high tides, surface water is unable to be released into the Exe, and because of the torrents coming down through, the water stays and it comes up through and in the roads, and there is flooding in Hartop Road, and I know that other properties in the colony have seen water beneath their floorboards. So and bear in mind, of course, that is reclaimed land. It was all built on marshland. So the costs having risen so much means that the scheme has to be submitted for grant and aid funding. And this has to go through the hoops. There's a very complicated formula, and we are in competition with, it shouldn't be competition, maybe that's, but the risks have to be prioritised. Other parts of the country, and you will have all seen the media pictures of film of flooding in Cumbria and Lancashire. Somerset levels, but that's much less densely populated. So in the really at-risk areas, we are, you know, competing on a national level. Well, there's been a little confusion in that flooding was allegedly, flood defence money was allegedly approved. In fact, the official approval for that, it's provisional approval at the moment, the official approval will not be given until February next year. Plans are in place, there is a lead project officer in place with the Environment Agency, and I was speaking with him this afternoon, and the cost has risen to now 18.9 million, which signifies that, you know, it could be a real problem. But fortunately, it's been recognised at a national level, and we very much hope, with various people being involved, various parties, and I won't name them, locally as well as nationally, that work will be carried out in 2018. On a separate issue, Sir Hugo Squire invited Sir James Bevan, who's chairman of the National Environment Agency Board, to Exmouth last month, and I was invited along, and we met on Exmouth Seafront, and Sir James was very interested in the Foxholes area, what was happening to the beach, and also the area which is being proposed for regeneration on the seafront. We didn't look at that time at the tidal defence scheme, but I understand that he did go out to look further on at the estuary side. But he was certainly interested in it. I was able to answer his questions as we walked along and also fill in the local knowledge that I had, changes to Exmouth Seafront over the years. He was very surprised that we had sand dunes. There was no sign of them seen. I said, well, they are, they're out there. Hopefully they'll come back with, you know, a few strong southeasterly gales. They will come back again, but they are out there. But I did also emphasise, as I did to the Environment Agency and the Flooding Committee, that 15 million had been, in colloquial terms, thrown at Dawlish Warren, and Exmouth seems to have been gradually dropped from the Dawlish Warren Exmouth Beach Management scheme. So I think he certainly seemed to have a quick grasp of the issue. And hopefully Exmouth is on their radar. I'm sure it is. And again, thanks to everybody. Cross party, it doesn't matter. Party politics doesn't come into something like this. Exmouth is what matters. And the issues that relate to the safety of our residents. So that's a very quick run through. Costs are still rising, but hopefully we will get approval for government funding for it. For next February, and then the scheme can progress. But it is said to be a very, very interesting scheme, and I'm sure that if you need to know any more, Lisa will be able to fill you in. Is that about fair?
Very fair, yeah, very fair summary.
Thanks so much, Holly. Could you like to answer a question?
I said, can we ask questions, Marlon?
You may, yes.
Through the chair. Arlene, did any of the experts indicate any concern over the removal of sand, pole sands, put onto Dawlish? Were they concerned it might have an impact on experts at all?
No, I'm not saying that they were experts. I'm not Sir James didn't have the the local knowledge, but no, but I, you know, think you've got the drift.
No,
pardon the expression, but I understand what you're saying, Fred. And also, another thing that was flagged up was the disrepair and neglect of the groins on this side, and also the implementation of the groins at the Orkhamend, which, as Paul even knows, has built up the beach levels over many, many years. So groins are very effective, and I also explained too about the effects of the docks development where water had run freely underneath the pier. That was all now filled in, so Archimedes said the water's got to go somewhere else, and that would change the whole coastline, beach line. So after that meeting, Fred, usually I think, I should have said that, or I forgot to say that. I can honestly say there was nothing that I thought I should have said to him. I think it was all covered at great speed.
Maddie?
Hi, Eileen. They started putting the groins in over at Dawlish Beach now, as you probably know. But I was under the impression that the dredger was supposed to be coming sort of end of July, August this year. I haven't heard anything about it. It's gone very, very quiet. And they haven't started moving the sand, because we weren't sure, were we, on which side of the sandbank it might cause a problem to Exmouth. Has the Environment Agency, you think, put a hold on it because they're not 100% sure yet? Or?
No, what the Environment Agency say, or what they have said in the past, is that there's plenty of sand on coal sands. There's enough there. Now, we've seen, and Fred would love this, the silting, and Pat Graham, if she was here as well, the silting up of the channels.
Yeah.
And you probably do, Jim, as a Coast Watch member, the silting up of the channels. So the sand is out there, and that actually acts as a coastal defence to Exmouth. But the trouble is, we lose in our beach. There's more of it out there than there is back here. But as long as another thing that I did flag up was my concern that down near Harbour View, the sea is encroaching further than it's ever done in my lifetime.
A metre a year, is it?
Sorry?
A metre a year, they were saying.
I don't know what it is there exactly. It's not an exact science, because it depends on weather and storm. But certainly where there is always soft sand, the sea has come up. You know, it took the ice cream kiosk away, and I showed him the rock armour that's had to be put around the new kiosk that's gone there. And I had this discussion again today with the Environment Agency, the new project officers. So they are well aware. They are aware. They are aware. And I think, regarding the regeneration thing, I'm not anti-development, nothing like that, but my one concern when we met with Morai was that if they were planning to put residential flats, which would be alongside the old lifeboat station, that's where they would go, then because of the sea coming up further than it's ever come before and washing away that building, that there was a real risk of flooding. And the answer that I had from the big chief at Morai was, oh, well, we'll raise the levels of the buildings. Well, I don't know what's going to happen there, but the thing is, there's considerable expense in raising levels of any building, as anyone would tell you from the Tesco thing in Seaton, and that any benefits to the community will diminish.
A nice pirate ship would be good, that would float.
Sorry?
A nice pirate ship for the kids would be good, that would float.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's where we are with it. But the good news is, it's likely, I can't give a complete assurance, and nor can they, because it has to be approved by, you know, the big chiefs. But it looks well set on course.
Okay, thank you.
Tim, please.
Thank you, Brian. Eileen, I just wondered how the cost had escalated so much. It appears that they've decided on an entirely new kind of scheme. Is that true? Do you know?
That's quite possible.
I don't
know the detail of that. You know, with the Smeaton Wall having been perhaps undermined, which wouldn't surprise me at all. It's been there since 1841. And certainly Jim Shapter, when he was here, often expressed concern about sea maybe going under the roads, and we have seen highway collapse along the seafront near, well, I still call it the Deer Leap, but
yeah.
I don't know where I'm meeting.
Yeah. I should hope so.
Okay.
Pauline?
About the dredging. The dredging is just like anything else you do with the sea. There is only a certain time that you get a licence to do it in. And the licence is, I think, it's March till June or something like that. So they can't stop dredging until the fishes have spawned and the birds have flown and everything's rosy in the sea. And so they've only got a short licence of about 3 months to do it in. March.
Well, they were supposed to be starting it this year, which was 2 years ago.
Yeah,
but they've just fallen behind that.
Well, they're doing something else, aren't they?
Well, Teebridge leads on that, and this is what's worried me, because Teebridge has led on the Dawlish Warren Beach Management Scheme, and they've led on the Shoreline Management Plan as well. So, Teebridge is going to look after Teebridge.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not a very fair thing to say.
Well,
but, you know, I'm concerned about this side as well. What you do to one side affects the other.
Well, that's what we said at Cabinet, wasn't it? That we weren't happy about it, so...
You'd have to ask the Teebridge officers about that.
I think East Devon are keeping a close eye to it.
Yeah.
They were going to do it every 5 years, but now they're keeping an eye year to year to see how the sand is going. So, you know, it's not been left.
Thanks. We did have a presentation some months back on the proposed tidal defence scheme, stretching right the way along from the estuary side, around the wall, and the swing gate going across the wall, and the rest.
Yeah.
I assume that is still the scheme.
Yeah.
I mean, is it that may reach the heli height of
18.9
million? What I'm going to ask is, should we as a town council actually take some active role? And should we write to, I don't know who, the environmental agency, whoever is doing this inspection and giving advice, write to the local MP as he's been down looking at it? I don't want to feel as a town council is sitting back and not taking any notice, but it does affect us.
No, I think, Bill, that's why I came to the town council following the meeting in July in Biddeford to ask for support from the town council. I believe that's been given. I don't know whether the letters went yes. And so I think it's a little bit of pressure from here, there, and everywhere else, and it's mounted. And I think that the scheme is on course.
Steve?
Thank you, Chair. You know, I would support what Bill says. I would be happy to send a letter to say that we understand what's going on. We need it done. We've all read what they've done over at Dawlish, spent a heck of a lot of money over there at Teebridge. And we saw what happened only the other week when we had that very heavy rain. You know, parts of Imperial Road, parts of Victoria Road were under water. But I think it's important also that we recognise the work that across party that have been done to get this scheme hopefully back on track, and I just like to say thank you to those people that have done it. And it just shows, respect of who they are, it's important to have somebody that's got local knowledge. can bring it forward rather than 2018, I think, so we have it a little bit earlier. But I mean, obviously, I understand, you know, the money's got to be fine. But as I think you rightly said, Eileen, it's a very high risk that we're talking about in Exmoor. And, you know, we're talking about the properties that are at risk. But thank you.
Is that a proposal, Steve?
Yeah.
Seconder, please?
I'll second.
Second bill. All in favour? Right.
Chairman, can I just say the important thing, and I've seen it, we've all seen it. Bill, you've seen it. Block drains. Now, East Devon is responsible for surface water runoff, and we do need the drains, and I'm going to go at anyone, but we do need the drains cleared. We see people sweeping their rubbish down. Full of blocked leaves in the autumn. And if the water can't run freely and drain off the highway, then we have got problems. And I think, really, if you want to put pressure on somebody, then ask whoever it is for the drains to be kept free.
Can I also ask that we send a letter to Hugo Swire and ask him for his continued support in this? And to support all councillors from Exmouth and the residents in their fight to get this through as quickly as possible.
Yep.
Seconded, please. Jeff. All in favour?
Carry.
Bill, sorry.
Chair, can I just come back to what Arlene said there? Very important. But a lot of the trouble is the drains are blocked before we start to get heavy rain and water coming over the sea wall. Could we write to, presumably, Highways Department, Devon County Council, and ask that all the drains around the Water Road and Andrews Road, all of those drains, are cleaned ASAP before we get into the nasty situation of spring tides in February, where the main problem usually occurs? So we write to
I think that could be raised through flooding land drainage, probably. That's the
5th of December meeting.
Is it?
Why do we wait until then? Why don't we ask them now?
Because the highways officer will be at that meeting, so if we can put pressure on him at the meeting, I can speak to him in the meantime. I'll speak to the highways officer in the meantime, but I think if we can reiterate it at the flooding and land drainage meeting.
But we've always been told that surface water drainage is the district responsibility and the drains and gullies are county. It's been a grey area in the past, but surely between them they should be able to do something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Eileen.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'll have to leave for another
meeting. Okay. Well, thanks very much for coming and keeping us up to date. With your agreement, I'll now invite our visitors from the CCG, Rob Sainsbury and Rebecca Marriott, to give us a short presentation before we open the item to discussion.
Thank you, Chairman. If I could just introduce Rebecca Harriott. Rebecca is the accountable officer at the CCG. She's the boss. I'm the chief operating officer at the CCG, and I'm also a member of the New Models of Care working group that's been working over the summer to develop how we'll try to deliver a different kind of model of care in across all of Devon, not just in this part of Devon. I'm going to talk to you about the consultation, and I just want to highlight there are some full documents at the back. Obviously, there is the full consultation meeting tomorrow, tomorrow afternoon. So I'm going to give you a summarised version of that presentation, and then Rebecca and I are happy to take any questions that you might have as well. But thank you for the time. Just to start, I thought it'd be helpful to have a context of the position and our function and the way that local NHS services are provided across Devon. So as a CCG, we're responsible for the services that cover northern, eastern and western Devon. but we do work closely with our other CCG neighbour, which is South Devon and Tor Bay CCG. We're the biggest CCG in the NHS in England. We serve around 900,000 people. Our budget is about £1.1 billion. We have our three acute hospitals that form part of those services, one in North Devon, one in Exeter, and one in Plymouth. And they have about 190,000 attendances per year, so it's quite a significant amount of attendances. We have 19 community hospitals. That's a lot of community hospitals across our North East and Western patch. We have one mental health trust, and we have one community interest company which also provides mental health services. And we have 116 GP practices that have 5.5 million GP appointments a year. So it's a very complex, very big landscape that we provide. And you'll know the geography better than I do. The transport and the distance to get from the north to the east to the west can be quite challenging. It can take a very long time. And each of those communities has their own unique need as well. In terms of our conclusions and the work that we've been doing, we've had some quite extensive work to understand the problems and the issues that we face within Devon. And you'll know that we have some real challenges. Within the consultation document, we describe what those challenges are, and that's informed what we've called the case for change and how we need to address those problems that we're facing. And this is really building on the work that we've already undertaken in previous consultations, so our transforming community care and our safe, effective care within the budget. When we've talked to members of the public, we are getting very consistent messages back that our services, as they're currently presented, are quite fragmented, they're very disjointed, we don't have as close working as we should between our health and our social care services particularly, and it can be a very difficult thing for our patients and our public to navigate. It can be a very difficult thing for the professionals to navigate at times. We've also got long life expectancy. You will know we have an older demographic within Devon, and that presents a challenge for us. People with complex needs is becoming a more prominent feature when people are coming into our hospitals. They're needing much more care than they had done previously. And we also know that the current model of care and the current way we provide those services is financially unsustainable. So if we carry on as we are today, with the services running in the way that they do today, by 2021, we'll be £400 million overspent. So we simply cannot carry on in the way that we currently are. And we believe that this is very much because our system, our healthcare system, is at the moment very, very focused on hospital-based care, and that we don't quite have enough focus on our out-of-hospital care and how we stop people going into hospital and how we help them to get out of hospital quicker. And the reason why this is becoming so important to us, and particularly the reason why it's becoming important to me as a clinician, is that we know there is very compelling evidence, both nationally and locally, that when our patients spend too long in hospital care, they can often come to harm. They're at much more risk of falling, they're at risk of disorientation, they're at risk of infection, and at times they can actually lose some of their independent function, that if they're cared for in a different way, can often provide a different outcome for them. So that's exactly why we're tackling the issues that we face. So in terms of how we want to address those challenges, we have developed what we've called a working group, which represents around 80 different clinicians, social workers, GPs, doctors from the hospital, therapists, and lots of community and acute hospital nurses as well. They've worked all over the summer. We've had a lot of working groups looking at the issues we face, and they've been developing what we've called the new model of care to address some of those challenges that we actually face. And they've very much focused on how do we stop patients going into hospital unnecessarily, and when patients do go into hospital, because people sometimes do need hospital care, how do we help them home in a much more seamless manner, and how can we make the whole flow less reliant on such long stays in our hospital. And these changes really aren't new. So we already have a lot of community and out-of-hospital services that are functioning across Devon. The issue that we have is that we don't have them at scale, and we can't say that we've got them in place across all of our landscaping deadens. So we have pockets of excellent practice, but we know, and you will know, you will experience it and you will speak to people, there are some places where we cannot get the care we require at the moment. So we have to have a rebalance about how we actually provide that care. In terms of the model of care, it's within the document, I won't go into this in too much detail, but there are three key principles that we believe are very important that they're implemented in order to help us manage patients away from hospital-based care. The first is about identifying need. We call that comprehensive assessment, and that's really about more preventative care. That's very much about how we do preventative care, and this is really looking at how do we identify need in a much more proactive manner. So when a person goes into our GP surgery or sees a professional, how are they thinking, actually, what does Mrs. Jones need right now, and what might they need in 6 months' time? How can I actually think in a proactive, preventative way rather than a reactive way? The second component is what we call a single point of access. This is really on the job, isn't it? This is proper multitasking for me. There we go. And this is an important one, because I can honestly say this is something that as professionals we really struggle with. It is very difficult to know what all of our services do. They're incredibly complex, they've all got lots of different names. And if I'm a newly qualified nurse or a doctor who's in A&E and has a person presented to them, they don't need to actually come into hospital because they're not physically unwell, but I am worried about their frailty and I'm worried about how they'll cope at home. At times, that new doctor or new nurse will not know who to refer to. They won't understand the services, and they sometimes have to spend hours ringing different people to try and get an outcome. It can be the same in a GP surgery. And where we've implemented this in other parts of Devon, a single number for a health professional to contact, they've had some real success because it gives the clinicians much more confidence that they can actually use a service in a different way. And then the third component is if you are going to make a referral into a service, you need the responsiveness. So we want to set up what we call rapid response services, and that's very much about if you have an urgent need, we will provide the care within 2 to 4 hours and an assessment within that period of time so that we can actually be much, much more responsive. And again, at times, we have that in place. We have some towns where we have excellent rapid response services in place, but we do not have it consistently. So we need to scale that up so that it's available across all parts of Devon, including East Devon. In terms of that focus, you'll see this within the document. We have seen, and there is evidence nationally and locally, that when we provide care in a different way, and we provide those three components of care and focus on out-of-hospital care, we have a much different level of productivity that we would call. So if you look at the community hospital at the moment, for 16 beds, it costs about £75,000 a month. It will see on average about 21 patients, because the lengths of stay are quite long for those patients, and often those beds are occupied by people who don't actually need to be there. They no longer have what we would call a medical need. And at the same time, for the same amount of money, we can have 12 nurses, 8 therapists, 7 support workers, as well as night sitters who could care for 82 people. And where we've shifted our resources in other parts of Devon, out of hospital, into the community, we've found that they've had a significant impact on the number of beds that are required. So the hospitals cope better with the challenges that they've had, and we've been able to have a better balance between real need for urgent care and hospital-based care and non-hospital-based care. And it is this thinking that has really informed our position, and this is what we are consulting on, because when we've looked at our bed ratio across North East and West Devon, we have a real consistency in the north and west based on their population need. They have a similar level of number of beds. But you will see the block in the middle for the east is very disproportionate. So the eastern part of the health system at the moment has nearly double the amount of the others that are required. And that's a significant amount of bed-based care and also a significant resource. And we need to remember that in our audits that we've undertaken, on any given day there can be up to 600 people in our beds across Devon who don't actually need to be there. They need something different. It could be social care, it could be home care, it could be more therapy, but they don't actually need to be in a hospital bed. And so our approach very much wants to flip that and change it, and we want to bring the eastern system in line with the northern and the western system, because when this has happened there, we've seen a much different reliance on the beds that are actually required in that part of the land. And this is this is what's informed our thinking about the consultation. So this is where it has led us to the options that we've determined within the consultation document. And so we started with a much longer list than this. We had 15 options originally that we put to our clinicians, our clinical cabinet and the working group to look at the options, and they essentially scrutinised them. So they looked at things like access, travel, distance, are the buildings accessible to carers, do the buildings have other capabilities, diagnostics, x-ray departments, and is there good value for money in the buildings as well. So they had to use an evaluation criteria to get to this position. And that's very much informed these four options that we want to put to the public. The two here that I'm sure will be of your close consideration is our option A and our option B, because they involve Exmouth. We should note that option A is actually our preferred option. A lot of people have been very anxious about that, and they said, well, you've already made your mind up. We haven't. It's a consultation. And we want to listen to what people are telling us, and people will be telling us information that we might not have considered. So we want to hear that feedback. But there is a very narrow margin between those options. When we've looked at the scoring, there isn't a clear outright winner in this from our perspective, but there is a preferred option, and that is our option A. And that is very much based on that criteria that I actually explained to you. In terms of how we will make our judgment, obviously we will get the information back from the consultation, we will consider all of that, and then the CCG has a responsibility to ensure that any conclusion it makes, so any of those preferred options that it would determine, we have a responsibility to make sure that we are able to implement them safely, those changes in a safe and effective manner. And so our GPs, our clinical membership, want absolute assurance that if we are going to make these changes and have a reduction in our beds in East Devon, we have to have a number of things in place to do it. So we have to make sure the alternative is available. And if that means that there's a community at the moment that doesn't have a component of those services that I mentioned earlier, or that isn't well served, we will have to address it. Otherwise, our GPs, our clinicians, will not sign off these changes. There has to be a very robust operational model that can be rolled out. The timing will be essential, and our clinicians will want to be assured that those services are ready and available to go. There's an awful lot of training required, because we do expect, if we're having less beds, we expect the staff who are now working within the beds will come out and work in the community. They will be available to work in a different way, and that isn't for everybody. I can say that from personal experience. I am a registered nurse, I've worked in an acute hospital, in a community hospital, I've worked in out of hospital. And out of hospital can be really scary when you're presenting with COVID patients. So you need a lot of care, you need a lot of training, a lot of support, and that's where you really need your experienced community nurses to be supported. So we will want all of those assurances to be in place before we are able to press the green light on any changes that we might have. And we set up a number of tests that we would want to consider for that as well. But clearly, we believe passionately that these changes, whilst we recognise that there is an element of financial efficiency by implementing this new model, from our perspective as clinicians, we actually believe if we didn't have a financial problem, we would want to do this anyway, because these changes in the way that we provide care is how we believe that we should be changing our focus from hospital-based care to non-hospital-based care. And again, there's very, very good evidence, both locally and nationally, that really supports this direction of travel. I'm happy to take any questions, and Rebecca, and obviously we've got the meeting tomorrow as well that I'm sure some of you might be attending.
Morning, Lynn. Oh, Lynn, sorry. Should we hear Pauline? Would you like to?
Thank you. Well, I've worked as a community care assistant for 33 years for social services, so I know it's gone round and round in circles, and we know about rapid response and everything else. In Devon County, it's home care, and it's only got about, I think it's 1,500 when I started, so I've got about 100 left now, if that, through the whole of Devon. And I'd like to know where you're going to get all these carers from. We heard on the national television the other day that there is a nationwide shortage of carers because it's not looked at as a very good job. Even though you have to have the qualifications, and I know I spoke to Angela Pedder and she said, oh yes, but I can get lots of healthcare assistance. There's a hell of a lot of difference between a healthcare assistant and a community worker that goes out, a healthcare assistant can press a bell and somebody can come running. A home carer can't. They go out and they, if something happens, they're by themselves. They have to wait for some emergency service to come. And they could be 10 or 12 miles from the nearest one. And so there's an awful lot of difference. So I can't see how you're going to get more of the carers to go out. Also, this is only going to cost
asking those questions, Chair. There's lots of, so you're absolutely right about the home care component. We recognise that, and there is a really big difference between East and North Devon particularly. So there is a real lack of home care in some parts of East Devon. We call them unfilled packages of care where you simply cannot get the carer. And there is a distinct difference in the way that the services are being provided. So in the north part of the patch, the NHS has said, actually, we think we've got a vested interest in investing in this ourselves. And so they've looked at payment models. They've become what we call a coordinated provider, so that if a home care agency isn't able to put a member of staff in, the trust will literally pay a heightened rate to be able to get somebody to go into that place. And they've had a very, very good response to that in terms of not having unfilled packages of care. There are still some delays within North Devon, but nationally, lots of places are now looking at the Northern Devon model because they have been one of the only trusts in the whole of the South West that has not had what you would determine as black alert or red alert for their hospital. They've had a very low rate of cancelled operations, and they've coped remarkably well with a much smaller bed equivalent amount of beds in the system. So we are looking at the work that they've undertaken. We've also looked beyond North Devon because we want the model to be slightly more comprehensive there, and we recognise there are some differences between East and North that we need to consider. So we've looked at other very rural areas and other urban areas as well. But you are right, the workforce element is the challenge that we really need to focus on, and Rebecca will pick up on the finance part of the question. Yes.
Shall I just answer the question about the 2 million out of the 400 million, which I think is a very good, question. What Rob said was that if we carry on doing things the same, we would be overspent by 400 million. So one of the things that a change to the away from a reliance on beds towards this means that we could treat a lot more people for the same amount of money. So instead of needing to keep investing more and more as the demand for services grows, which is where the 400 million comes from, what we've calculated with this proposal is that not only does it make a small net saving, actually it enables us to treat a lot more patients than if we spend the money in the current way. And so I really support what Rob said. Our clinicians are saying this is the right thing to do for patients. Actually, it's also much better value for taxpayers' money to spend the money as wisely as we can, so every pound goes as far as possible in an environment where demand is going up and up. And it's that that generates the 400 million, because we have to find different ways to work. And that statistic about 21 people or 82 people is part of the thinking here, that if we want to get fit for the future. We also think that if we can make the switch to make sure there are reliable services available to either not admit people into acute hospitals and discharge them from acute hospitals, that unlocks the opportunity for saving further money in the acute hospitals, which we haven't at all counted as part of the 2 million. The 2 million is literally the amount that you would save from closing some community hospital beds and reinvesting a significant amount of that money into community services. There's a net saving. But on the back of this change, we will see in the future more savings coming out of the acute hospital sector.
Thank you. Tim?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I just wanted to say that and draw attention to the fact that East Devon District Council passed a motion to the effect that, looking at the options that have been set out by you, that we shouldn't play a beg your neighbour game, and we shouldn't be trying to close beds and say, well, option A is the one that would favour Exmouth, therefore we're going to go for option A. I'd like to go back in my own personal history, because I moved from North Cornwall to East Devon, and I was in a position where I had a look at quite a number of our community hospitals in East Devon when I arrived. And the great thing I noticed about that was how advanced the whole system was, in my view at that time, compared with North Cornwall, which is very similar to when I worked in North Devon for a number of years in Barnstaple. So I know what the situation is there. I've also seen in recent years, in particular Torrington, and of course I know that the system that is used is quite unpopular in many ways, and I would suggest that particularly, as you say, Rebecca, with the demand going up, which we know is a national phenomenon, which will happen more here because we have an elderly population, I would suggest to you that the model of operating you should be going for, and I'm a lay person, so I bow to your, you know, your ability and the way you looked at it, but I would say that your community hospitals give you a great buffer and enable you, as you were saying just now, a way of keeping bed blocking out of acute hospitals so that you can use that and then spend extra money on the home carers. But all of this depends ultimately on the ability of government to recognise that the difficulty it has at the moment, looking at it down the other end of the telescope, is a financial problem. The problem they have is saying, we haven't got the money. The way they should be looking at that is saying, where are we going to access this money? And that is, you know, your problem, County Council's problem, to tell that they need to be looking for the additional resource that we actually require at ground level. And I think not only health, but education, recently prisons we've seen, police, all our services are suffering in that way.
I mean, certainly we'd always welcome additional funding in the NHS, and things are very pressured. I have to be very honest, though, and say if we had extra money, we wouldn't want to spend it on keeping community hospital beds open, because our clinical evidence suggests that that's causing harm to individuals. It doesn't make the best use of our professional, qualified workforce in the way that we should. We need to keep hospital for people that actually need a hospital bed, and so there's still plenty of beds for people that need to be there. We're actually only talking about people for whom a different package is more appropriate. We would spend the extra money on increased care in the community, increased expenditure on mental health, dementia services. That's where we see the priorities, and in terms of best value for the taxpayers' pound, as well as the best care for patients. It's our clinicians' view is that spending it on community hospital, having more community hospital beds than is needed, is not the right way to run the system.
Maddie, please.
Right, I was manager care home privates, and I always thought the national health was the jewel in the British crown. I think you've gone as far as you can go, to be quite honest at the moment, before you actually hit the buffers. You are a trust contracted to run this health service in this area. Our D&E for 24 days now has been on red, with bed blocking. You're now talking about shutting down or closing down beds. You've got the largest town in East Devon, and you're giving us 16 beds. Oh, wonderful, you know. They're going to be stuck in our D&E. If someone breaks a hip, has surgery, you can't send them home. Years ago, we used to have convalescent homes. So elderly that had operations and couldn't go home, you would have them in and you could have one carer to eight. Now you're saying, oh yes, but we can do it one-on-one. But the point is you can't, because the carers that want to go out in the community are, one, it's not good pay. They don't like being out in all hours and working on their own. They don't like responsibility. Three, they've got to do lots and lots of training, and for someone that's had a hip operation, you've also got to have a manual handling certificate, as well as health and safety, and all the others, and you've gone as far as you can without recruiting enough people. Because if you shut down beds, we are in January and February going to be in real trouble, because if we have a flu epidemic, our D&E won't be able to cope. And in which case the public are then going to turn round to the trust and say, right, it is about time we looked at your contract, because if you can't sort things out financially and give the public a better deal and look after their health and their elderly, then we have to look at something else. So really and truly, you should be recruiting people and training them up before you start cutting beds down, and you should be lobbying MPs and the government and everyone else with the backing of all the councils and say, you know, we're not having it. We are not having it. It is dangerous. And we pay our money to support our families, our friends, and the local community and residents. And you can't go willy-nilly around shutting things down and expecting people to cope, because they can't. And I know quite a few homes around here now, they won't take social services patients because they're not getting enough money for them. And also they're employing people from Poland. You know, what's going to happen when we leave the euro, I don't know, because they can't get the staff. And also a lot of staff trying to get them to do their MVQs is an absolute nightmare. So, you know, so please don't give us any loan of flow, because I really think that you need to look at it a different way now. I think you've gone far enough, and you haven't got enough carers out there. And like Linda said, they've been waiting a hell of a long time for rapid response, and some people have waited a good couple of days for rapid response. So it's not working, you need to look at it again.
I mean, you make a lot of really, really important points, and I agree with much of what you say. I think our issue is that we have been trying to make the current system work, and it results in people get stuck in the RD&E, they can't get discharged because we haven't got the resources out in the community. We've got all of our money locked up in staffing the beds that people are stuck in because there's no funding out in the community. As Rob said, we've got 600 people every day in hospital beds in Devon who don't need to be there, but they're there because there isn't an alternative package available. And unless we can unlock the funding and the staffing from a bed-based system into a community-based system, then we're in this catch-22 of never being able to get people out of hospital. Now, I think it's really important, though, to say that we're not looking at closing a load of beds before the services are available. We do need to make sure there's a smooth transition, but the final slide that Rob put up, which the clinicians have been absolutely insistent upon, is that they wouldn't agree with any decision. So post the consultation, if the view is that there are some of these proposals that we want to continue with, the clinicians would not support them if they weren't satisfied that they could be implemented safely, so that the staff training was in place, the posts had been recruited to. And so we certainly wouldn't be proposing closing the beds and leaving a gap between that and other services being available. It wouldn't get past the clinical checklist for proceeding.
We need to move on, Councillor. So I'm going to ask Brenda to make a point, please.
I think the points I wanted to raise have already been raised by Pauline and Maddie, in as much that we haven't got the carers there to do it. I mean, we're looking at the nursing homes, it's nearly all foreign carers in the homes now, and I think that's your biggest problem, is getting that home.
Thank you, Brenda. Lynn, would you like to summarise, please?
Can I ask a question first?
All right.
Only because you mentioned about integration, which is what I think one of the biggest integration with social services and integration with Devon County with health. But I just wondered how you see that. You've already highlighted by Chapman concerning the cost of Devon County and the amount they put in for nursing home beds. But we also have the same when we've had the community healthcare funding that now they've reduced that and reduced the actual criteria, you know, the time and the limits and everything, which at the moment we're getting assessments taking longer than it does to take you getting actual funding in place for somebody that's going home. I just wondered whether you see that as another problem financially being able to liaise with Devon County to get funding.
I think it's an opportunity for both of us, because if Devon County Council were here, they would say the same as the NHS, that a lot of their funding is locked up in bed-based care, and the secret of success is to enable people to stay well and independent for longer in order to avoid people needing residential and nursing home options that the County Council is paying for. And so we've got the whole system, both health and social care, locked into a sort of a dependency model of looking after people rather than an independence and support model of looking after people. And so this work has been done absolutely in partnership with Devon County Council. They're part of the social workers have been part of designing the model of care, as well as us talking to the County Council about how the money works between the two organisations. And so they would be very supportive of these proposals and see them as a way of also making sure the social care funding is targeted to areas that makes the most difference for people.
Lynn, do you have your motion?
Yes, so the motion I put was this council recognises the challenges that the new Devon CCG is facing, particularly in our area from the sub-average population of elderly people. We also recognise the fact that people prefer to care for in their own home, but the community services are already overstretched and packages of care are very often not available. This is not, and also it's not always possible for them to be at home because of their special medical needs. The view of Exeter being the largest town in Devon, we cannot support any reduction of beds and therefore support option A. However, we would welcome more clinical services and consultations being transferred to the community hospital so that it's fully utilised.
Thank you. Seconder?
No, I want to amend it.
Oh.
I'd like to amend the last bit about where it says we go for option A. I don't think we should go for any options. I think we should stick out and fight for all our. Everybody's, not just ours, but for everybody's in East Devon. Because once you go and put that down, then that's giving them the green light to go ahead.
I'll second the amendment.
Yeah.
So I'll
agree with that.
So
everything else apart from that amendment on option A.
Take
the.
You've got all that written down, have you?
Yeah.
With the amendment?
Yeah, I've taken out support.
Lovely. Could you let the clerk have a copy of that afterwards, please?
Yes,
yeah. And who's going to second this? Fred. Those in favour?
Can I, Chair, just ask whether Lynn is accepting that amendment?
Yes. I've accepted that we reform Section A, and then we'll change that to community hospitals.
All in favour? Those against? Abstention? Thank you very much. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. I'll see some people tomorrow.
Yes, I should be there. Moving on.
Don't forget Beryl's tonight.
Yeah. Could you get Beryl back in, please, if he's still awake?
Another aspect of it, you've got to be careful.
It's a whole new ball game, and
yeah.
That's where
yeah.
The police and the authorities have actually got to look.
Right.
But it's already.
That's what
it's already,
the actual drone. It's actually what the.
It's already escaped out of the box before they've actually gone in.
Right, thank you for airing that, councillors. Item 14, grant application. We've got an application from Devon UK Mega 2017, for a contribution of £500 towards the cost of putting on an event at Bicton College.
Cherry. Officers are based in Timothy.
Steve?
I can't see how they're spending a lot of people dressing.
They should go to Badger and ask them to do it.
Steve, please.
Yes, no, Michelle, we would be happy to support that because we thought exactly the same. We didn't actually think it. I'm looking at Mark to see what was the criteria better than it, whether it actually fit our criteria.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Well, I think we have not in front of me actually, see, but it's not sufficiently local.
No.
Right, put it to the vote then. Those in favour? Those against? Carried unanimously. Item 15, budgetary control and authority to spend. We need authorisation from the council for the payments listed. Can we have a proposal, please? En bloc, yeah, please, yeah. So, Lynn proposed, would you like to second?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Those in favour? Thank you very much. And we now move into part two.